Hello, welcome to the RTE Olympics podcast. Hope you're all doing well. A good evening for Ireland, I think it has to be said, in Paris, on day two of the Olympics. After a few worrying bouts, we finally got a winner in the boxing. Jack Marley in the heavyweights is now just one fight away from a medal. And in the pool, it was a phenomenal evening, really, with Mona McSharry setting a new a national record in the 100-meter breaststroke to make it through to tomorrow's final as the second fastest qualifier, which, obviously means she's in the mix for a medal, which is a fantastic thing to say. Second consecutive Olympic 100 meters breaststroke final for Mona. Anyway, we will be chatting to Irish Olympian Barry Murphy about that shortly. But first, I want to go over to Raph Diallo in the Paris-Nord Arena. Raph has been there, sat through a couple of defeats, Raph, but yeah. Those who persevere,
Yeah,
you got to see a
indeed.
win in the end.
Yeah, I've been here all day, and it was right at the very end, just a few minutes ago there, that Jack Marley finally ended the run of defeats that Team Ireland have had since the boxing competition started yesterday. So, of course, we'd had Dean Clancy yesterday, who lost by split decision. That word split decision and loss was kind of the theme going into this morning as well. Aidan Walsh, of course, had a lot of success 3 years ago in getting to win a bronze medal in Tokyo. He lost against a home favourite here, Frenchman Makhem Traoré, also by split decision 4-0. And then in the afternoon session, then it was Gráinne Walsh, obviously from Offaly, from Tullamore. They grew up just down the road from Shane Lowry and knows their family well. This was her Olympics debut. But unfortunately, she also ended up losing by split decision 4-1, and that was to Anna Luka Hamori of Hungary. So there was a huge amount of pressure and a sense of there was a sense of gloom, I think, building from the Irish point of view there, even though obviously the tricolours that you see around here, and the Monkstown BC flag, which of course was there for Jack Marley on the far side of the arena, there was still that sense of a little bit of a buzz that hopefully something would happen, and Marley delivered. Now, he was seeded seventh. His opponent, a Polish fighter called Mateusz Berzynski, he was not seeded, but there was a height advantage for the Polish fighter. But Marley didn't really let that get to him, and he was the aggressor. He kind of dominated the center of the ring, and he won each round 4-1. So a split decision victory. And given the nature of the heavyweight division, he goes straight into a quarter final. Now, his next opponent is from Tajikistan, and he's the second seed,
It's
Davlat
never good when their name finishes when the name of the country ends with an ishtan when it comes to boxing.
Altaev. No, it does not. But I did watch the fight directly after it, and he was fighting a Georgian opponent who was very aggressive, maybe more aggressive than the way Marley was against his own opponent. But Marley himself was quite aggressive. I think that might be the way to go, because Altaev definitely seemed to be unnerved by that. And yes, he won by split decision, but it was very, very narrow as well. So yeah, a tough one. But Marley has a little bit of hope, and as you know, given the nature, as I said, of it, a quarter final win, we know what that means if he's to win that, and that fight will be coming up on Thursday.
Great. And who is boxing tomorrow for us, Raf?
Kelly Harrington is fighting. She's got an Italian opponent, Alessia Messiano, and Kelly will be, of course, as a gold medal winner from Tokyo, she will be the favorite going into it. But at least there is momentum now from a Team Ireland point of view, and things are pointing up. It's 1-4 in terms of the, if we're going with that kind of trend in terms of how it's gone. But there is optimism in terms of Kelly Harrington. Of course, there will be for Aoife O'Rourke later in the week as well. I was speaking to Kenneth Egan at the Irish Cultural Centre when the flag bearer ceremony was happening, and he marked it down that that's the one he's putting he's putting a lot of expectation in terms of Aoife O'Rourke. He thinks she can win gold. So we'll see what happens, but at least we're leaving here with a slightly lighter mood.
Okay. Well, Raf, thank you very much for that, and we'll catch up with you during the week. You can head off now. Good night's
Thanks very
work
much.
done.
Yeah.
All right, chat to you again, Raf.
See ya.
Barry, you've ever been mistaken for a boxer? I kind of wondered, the body shape, kind of, the big upper body. Anyone ever think that was your sport?
No, never. We did a bit of boxing as a bit of cross training back in the day, but it was never anything. No, non-combative boxing, I would say.
Okay. You're a swimmer, not a fighter.
Exactly, yeah. Aquatic space, all aquatic space.
Okay, well, look, as I said, like I was kind of getting you on this evening. The plan was, now I wasn't was a focus on Daniel Whiffen as our you know, a serious medal contender we have, and wasn't that we were sleeping on Mona McSherry, a finalist in Tokyo. But the nature of her two performances today, like, you know, she is now a serious medal contender, and dare I say it, even a gold medal contender.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that performance tonight was the perfect semi-final performance for her. To come into the games, and, you know, there's always those nerves about how are you going to handle this new environment, because you have to appreciate, although she is an Olympic finalist, this Olympic experience is completely different from Tokyo for all of them. The crowd, the atmosphere, the kind of carnival around it wasn't like Tokyo. You know, Tokyo was a very, very different thing. So for her to go into this and be right on her best time this morning in her first swim, where she said she felt a bit nervous, where she said she maybe had to make some tweaks, and then to come back this evening and do a best time, break a national record, and then to be going into that final in second place, is, you know, it's just fallen, everything's falling into place for her. It really is spectacular what she did there tonight. You know, I was kind of watching the race, and I thought she wasn't as aggressive as she was this morning in her first 50. She was down a little bit in the kind of the first 25, 30 meters. Now, sometimes in breaststroke, I was a breaststroker, so I kind of understand the stroke. So sometimes what happens is, if you see your opponents kind of on your periphery get ahead of you, your mind can go. And with breaststroke, because it's such a technical stroke, you know, you can start slipping the water, you can start almost trying too hard and spinning your wheels a bit. But she was so calm and so cool. Her first 50 was, you know, right on point. She was 30.9, which is, again, an excellent first split. And then she brought it back like an absolute train. We knew she was in good shape coming into these games. She had, you know, absolutely demolished the Irish record in the 200. So she'd had that endurance background. She's been putting in the work, and she came back like an absolute monster. So I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night. It could be a great day for the Irish all round, with Daniel in the morning and Mona in the evening. I think Ellen has a good shout as well. So it's going to be exciting. And yeah, roll on tomorrow night. We have a swimmer in lane 5 of an Olympic final, which is unbelievable.
It's incredible. The one thing that struck me from her interview after her heat with Paul O'Flynn, our colleague, was she seems really confident. She just seems like, well, she's 3 years older, obviously. You know, she's graduated from college in Tennessee, and like, she is older and she is more mature, but she just, there was an air of confidence about her that I think she lacked in Tokyo, probably because it was the first Olympics, and like, it is an overwhelming thing. She seems like a more competitive animal now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what the American system does really well is it turns, you know, good swimmers into great racers. The American collegiate system is a race heavy system. They're racing week in, week out. And anytime you step on the blocks, you're racing a potential, Olympian, Olympic finalist, world champion. Like, they're all scattered throughout the American system. So she would have honed her skills in the collegiate NCAA system. She was regular podium finisher at NCAAs, which is notably and renowned for being the fastest meet in the world. It's a short course yards meet, so the speeds they're hitting is faster than any other meet ever. So she was always in the mix there, always on the podiums there. And now she's come in 3 years on, a new perspective, having, you know, sharpened those skills and honed in on those racing skills. And we saw it, you know, closing today. She was able to you know, get into the race and really attack that finish. And it's only going to stand to her tomorrow as well.
Yeah, so she's, her time, just for anyone who doesn't know, a minute, 5 seconds, 5.51 seconds is new national record, which was her own record. She was only behind the South African Tatiana Smith, and then you probably have the favorite, or well, at least the reigning world champion, Quanting Chang from China, was fourth fastest. Lily King from China, from the USA, would have been expected to be up there. Is it a surprise that Smith is fastest qualifier?
No, Smith is the current 200 meter Olympic champion. So she went by Tatiana Schoonmaker in the last games. So she's the 100 meter silver medalist and the 200 meter current Olympic champ. So again, she's got the pedigree and she has the background being a 200 swimmer. Maybe a little surprised she's going as fast as she is. But you know, that final's absolutely stacked. I can't tell you how impressive it is that, you know, Mona McSherry is you know, beating Lily King. She beat Melatuti as well. So there was, you know, Olympic champions scattered all over that semi-final. And for her to put in that performance, I think is a huge testament to the work she's put in, her mindset going in, that sort of swimming without fear, and really, you know, staking a claim on her place in that final.
Is it a fast pool, Barry, do you think?
I've been trying to figure it out because there has been fast swims, and we saw Leon Marchand tonight, the home favourite in the 400 IM, just missed the world record. I am of the opinion that it's actually, because breaststroke is a lower stroke in the water, it's actually slower for the breaststroke swimmers. Adam Peaty's going tonight, so that'll be an interesting kind of what time he drops. That'll probably give it a bit more of a barometer of how it is. Because breaststroke's a lower sport, there's more turbulence and you have to work yourself through that water a bit more. But I've seen the freestyle where they're on top of the water a bit more and it looks fast there. I don't know. Yeah, it's yet to be determined. It's the Olympic Games. Times don't really matter. It's about who gets their hand on the wall first.
It absolutely is. But for people like me who kind of gets interested in swimming, let's be honest, maybe every two
Once
years,
every
if not
four
every
years.
4 years. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm fascinated by what it means to be a fast pool. Like, can you give us, take the breaststroke out of it, because I kind of get you on the breaststroke there with the turbulence.
Sure.
What does it mean for it to be a fast pool for the freestyle? Like, how is a pool fast?
So the kind of consensus is the deeper the pool is, the faster it is. And the reason for that is the water has more space to disperse and be less turbulent. So the majority of times that we would swim in these kind of elite competitions, your Worlds, your Europeans, the pool is usually 3 meters deep. You'll especially notice it at the end of a 50 or on the first turn of 100 meters freestyle. When you see the bell wave and the wash come off, especially the men, the power that they have, it'll come off. And then the guys would hit the wall and then try and get under that water to avoid the wave and avoid the turbulence. So it just means that the water, the energy of the water disperses more and creates less turbulence. When it's a shallower pool, the water will then push off the bottom and come back and bounce back up. So it's a much more turbulent environment, and that creates more drag. It creates more resistance in the water. It makes it harder. So it does tend to be a quote unquote slower pool.
Okay.
And that's what we usually mean to when it's a fast or slow pool.
Okay. So if money was no object, you'd have a pool that was 10 meters deep and it would be as fast as
ever. Yeah, it would be ideal. Yeah, ideal.
But that's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water. Yeah. It's a lot of energy to heat that.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That's the other thing I wanted to ask you. Does the heat of the water factor, the temperature of the water factor into whether the pool is hot or cold? Or faster, slow, I mean.
The racing pools are normally that little bit more colder than probably your average training pool. I don't know the degrees off the top of my head, but there are rules about like what temperature the pool has to be. When you go to these big competitions, the diving pool and the warm pools are usually that little bit more cozy to jump in. When you get into the racing pool, you're always like, whoa, takes your breath a bit. So there are different temperatures.
Okay, and is that supposed to be faster, a colder pool?
Especially for the longest distance guys, because they're obviously, you know, working that much harder, their heart rate is going up, they're exerting that more energy over a longer period of time, so it's meant to be definitely better for them.
Okay, well, that's a nice segue on to our man Daniel Whiffen, who is Daniel Whiffen. We've had this for a long time. He was born in County Down, but he went to school in Armagh, and he considers himself an Armagh man. We had
we haven't
figured out. Listen, he is coming in here like he's got a target on his back. He won the World Championships, admittedly, you know, missing probably the big hitters who are going to be here for the 800 and the 1500. So let's talk about the 800 first. Bobby Fink of America is probably the favorite, I would imagine. Oh, sorry, Sam Short in Australia and Bobby Fink.
Yeah.
They'd be the two. They're the two that Daniel has to beat, basically, if he wants to win gold.
Yeah. They were the two. Bobby Fink's the defending Olympic champ. Sam Short has just come through in the last couple of years. He's super talented. The 400 meter champion Hafuni isn't in. He's withdrawn from the game, so that's a huge name to be dropped. But again, Daniel's coming in with a target on his back, being the current world champion in the event. So look, it's going to be. I'm really interested to see how he approaches the heat, because he's in a really competitive heat with Sam Short, Elijah Whittington as well. you know, I think these guys are going to be probably feeling each other out on this and just sort of seeing who goes, who doesn't go. It's going to be pretty strategic. He just needs to make sure he's in the final, really. He has the, you know, he's well able to do it as a near training swim to make the final. He just needs to make sure he's in there and that he gives himself a decent opportunity to be in and around Bobby Fink. I think Bobby Fink is the real threat. Again, the reason I say this is the Americans are racers. You know, they'll put it on the line for the red, white, and blue. They love it. They step up. They always race. And Bobby Fink is a phenomenal racer. So I think that's where the threat is going to come. Bobby Fink closes like a train as well. His last 50s are known. They're called Bobby Fink's last 50s. You know, they're known to be unbelievable. So Daniel has to just make sure he knows where Bobby is in the race and can see him in that final. And yeah, it's going to be who can gut it out in that 800.
Because is Daniel's kind of known as a guy who's best when he's leading front to front, isn't he? He tries to blow people away in the first half of the race and have like a length to spare and just kind of not cruise home, but kind of know he's in control, which obviously won't happen in an Olympic final, I guess.
That was it. Like, that was kind of, how I would see it. Anytime I've seen him be spectacular, he's blown the field away quite early. And just has been in total control, but he's not going to have it his own way at the Olympic Games. Like, it's just not going to happen. You know, these guys are racers. They're absolute killers in the water. And, you know, come that final, it's going to be really interesting to see how he's able to handle that. He's supremely confident. You know, I love listening to his interviews. It's just so matter of fact that, like, this is what I'm going to do, and then I'm just going to go and do it. And I love that about him. It's real refreshing to hear an Irish athlete speak like that. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. The games are building up. You know, he's been our kind of our poster boy over the last couple of years. And, yeah, I'm really interested to see how these heats go in the morning.
Yeah. And then, obviously, he is also going in the 1500 meter where you've kind of got some of the same characters, obviously.
Yeah.
Is there anybody in the 1500 meter who's a serious contender who isn't in the
800
meter?
Yeah, Bobby. You know, no, I don't think so.
Same characters. Yeah.
The same characters, and these some of the same characters again is gonna they're gonna be swimming in the open water as well at the end of the next week. So that'll be Daniel's sort of first little flurry into that. Again, something I've always wanted to see him do. These boys train like ungodly amounts of mileage week in, week out.
So like he was training the day after he won his world championship, I think, wasn't he? Or like 2 days after it. He just relentless.
It is mind blowing. As someone who kind of specialized in 50s, you know, we like our rest and our relaxation and
half
our
hour
time.
In the morning and then, you know,
that's it. Sit in the hot tub for a little bit. But no, these guys train crazy amounts of mileage. It's almost frightening the yardage they put in. And yeah, so I think he'll transition quite well to the open water. And mad that he's, you know, this is going to be his first time kind of giving it a go, and it's the Olympic Games. So yeah, it's the same crew. Like, these distance guys, they're kind of known for like rolling as in packs. Some of the team will maybe, like, the 400 guys will step up to the 800. I think Lucas Martins, the German who won the 400 meters, he probably step up to the 800, but he might not go as far as the 1500. He's more of that middle distance speed. But yeah, the distance guys will go 800 and up all day long.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible thing to watch. It's obviously not as, you know, the splash and dash, etc., is, you know, kind of a marquee event because of like the explosiveness of what you said, but just the sheer athletic ability and stamina of the 800 and 1500 is something to behold.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's when you've, like, again, they're almost like different sports. Sprint swimming and distance swimming, it's they're almost like different, completely different sports. We say we do the same thing, but we really don't.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Thank you very much, Barry. Obviously, you'll be able to watch Daniel and Mona tomorrow on RT2 and the RT Player. And the RT News app and the RT Sports website will keep you covered as well. And we'll have exclusive highlights there. And our live blog will be going all day. Do please follow this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And that includes YouTube. But just before I go, Barry, I like to share a quirky Olympic story at the end of the podcast. And I have got a swimming one for you. So I want to know, do you know a woman called Eleanor Holm?
I don't know.
Okay. She was the 1932 100 meters backstroke champion. She's an American. She won gold, so she was hoping to go to Munich in 1936 and defend. But she was kicked off the US team for excessive carousing aboard the SS Manhattan on the way from across the Atlantic. She admits she had a few glasses of champagne, but she reckons it was a grudge was held against her by the US Olympic president, Avery Brundage. 50% of the team petitioned for her to be returned, but Brundage wasn't returning. And it's okay, though. It ended up okay for her. She ended up being the president of the IOC. And she also starred in the Hollywood movie Tarzan's Revenge. So
there you go.
Eleanor Holm.
Happy days.
There's a life.
Have fun. Yeah. We need to get those races.
Yeah. She had a good time. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Listen, thank you very much for joining me, Barry. And we will hopefully catch up with you again later in the week if we've got some more Irish medal hopes to chat about. So thanks very much, Barry, and everybody else. I will chat to you tomorrow. Good luck. Goodbye.
Thanks, Mikey.